The Data Reaper podcast is a companion which provides extra insight into the weekly report found at viciousyndicate.com. Join us for a deeper dive into the numbers to help you improve your Hearthstone game.
Hello and welcome to episode 128 of the Data Reaper podcast. I am your host for this episode and one more, Ridiculous Hat. And I am joined by the Zen Zacko. Zach, peace be with you.
Greetings, Hat. I am at peace.
Oh, you're so zen right now. It's like I'm looking at the sound waves, and it's just flat and smooth. So peaceful.
Yeah. The problem is, even when I am Zen Zacko, if I write a bunch of comments, if I write a bunch of text, people still think, imagine me ranting. But I am not. I am calm and cool as a cucumber.
Cool as a death knight.
Yes, I am. I simply observe and make comments in a calm demeanor. And we're going to make more calm demeanor comments in this podcast as well, as we discuss the meta and other stuff that we should discuss too.
This is nice. It's like the Bob Ross Data Reaper podcast. I can get behind this. I look forward to listening to this show after I'm no longer on it.
Happy little Hearthstone cards. We're going to make this deck, and this deck hits face a little bit, and then it plays a removal card, and it's going to be happy. Just do whatever you want. You're in control. You're in control.
Well, our listeners are at peace now, so we should give them some details as to what's going on. So this is early impressions. We're actually pretty close to your analysis for the start of the report, recording this Sunday night into Monday, my time, your Monday morning, and you'll start refining decklist tomorrow-ish. So we're not too far out from that, but still, there is time for things to change. It is not final. Just what we're seeing with basically a full weekend's worth of data from the balance patch, which hit on Thursday. So I'm going to do class by class. The report should be on time on Thursday the 4th. And then we're expecting the episode to be over the weekend. Probably normal time on Saturday the 6th. Might be Sunday the 7th, but probably Saturday the 6th. We'll see exactly what happens here. And then the show will continue. And we'll announce more details about that next weekend.
Yep. There should be something special because it's going to be Hat's last podcast next week. And it should be fun. I'm looking forward to that. But for now, let's talk about the meta that is happening post-balance patch. And there were a lot of buffs and also some nerfs. And we should start talking about movements and occurrences happening in the format. And we start with Death Knight, obviously, which is still the most popular class, not as popular as it was before the balance patch, but its decks are still quite visible and prevalent. And I completely understand the sentiment around Death Knight still being popular, but there are things that are worth mentioning about the nerfs and the impact of the nerfs. So let's start first with Frost Aggro Death Knight. The deck is obviously still good throughout ladder, but especially on the climb to legend. However, there is a win rate decline that is being masked quite a bit by the proliferation of bad decks. The buff patch obviously encourages experimentation. Some of the decks that the buff patch has introduced are actually competitive, but many of them are still not competitive and not very good. And while all these decks lose to pretty much every meta deck, these decks tend to lose to good decks, Frost Death Knight particularly punish those decks, especially when it comes to the mage class. Death Knight kind of obliterates things that are bad, like obliterates the bad mage decks.
70% plus matchups here. The patch introduced two different kinds of decks. There are competitive decks and there are mage decks. And unfortunately speaking, people really wanted to play the mage decks. And I'm memeing a bit here. Like, there might be something in mage to find. Unfortunately, it probably doesn't involve Spite Lash Siren. And yeah, Frost farms it. And so where people are playing Spite Lash Siren, they are losing to Frost.
Yeah. So Frost particularly farms Naga Mage. And it also farms other decks that are unrefined more than, you know, other meta decks. Frost is very good at punishing bad decks. And that helps kind of mask its win rate decline against the refined field. So when I look at the data, what I do in order to understand future trends and where Death Knight is located, I kind of look at a matchup spread and then eliminate the decks that I expect to disappear and then look at the expected win rate of like a Frost aggro Death Knight deck. And I am seeing definitely a decline. The deck is still fine, like it's still competitive. I think that's a good thing that we're nerfing a deck and it's still competitive, but it's not as powerful as it used to be. In fact, it's very likely not going to be the best deck or the second best deck pretty much everywhere on ladder. There are decks that are currently performing better than Frost Aggro Death Knight on the climb to legend. This is despite the Naga Mage tax existing. And a top legend hat, Frost Death Knight is teetering on the brink of, like, it's tier 3. It's a tier 3 performer atop legend. It's getting completely obliterated there. At some point yesterday, I kind of tried to future trend it, and it hit tier 4 in my future trends.
Wow.
I'm not sure I'm going to hit tier 4. It might be able to recover because I expect that some good matchups for Frost Death Knight are going to rise, and that's kind of going to balance it. But that's kind of what I'm seeing, that Frost Death Knight is not even good at high levels of play, where, again, people play less of the bad decks and people play more refined stuff. And where the meta is most advanced is top legend. And when you see Frost Aggro Death Knight genuinely struggling at top legend, it's not a complete indicator that this is going to spill over to the rest of ladder. I'm pretty confident it won't completely spill over. But it does suggest that in a refined format, Frost Aggro Death Knight is nowhere near as good as it was before the patch. Now, this is the result of both the balance changes, which seem to have affected its matchups against multiple established decks, but also meta trends that were happening even before the patch that kind of knocked Frost Aggro down, which is another good explanation for why it's good not to over nerf decks and you know, kill them, because there might be natural meta occurrences that tone it down. It's also a possibility, and that's happening here. So the combination of those two things are pushing Frost Aggro to the point where even now it is struggling at top legend. It is not a top three deck everywhere on any other ladder bracket on ladder, save for, I think, maybe bronze, around the bronze to gold mark. And it's trending down every day because if bad decks disappear, then it's going to have less of the free wins that it's currently having that is kind of masking its decline in win rate and power. And when people look at flat win rates at several data sites, at the moment, they see Frost Death Knight still doing good, and they're saying, okay, the patch didn't really do anything. But when you curate the format to take out the decks that are not going to stick around, you actually see this deck being quite vulnerable, more vulnerable than it was before. There's definitely been an effect of the patch. The fact that top legend, like if a top legend player was asking me to what to play in order to hit a top finish, I would be very tempted to just tell him, like, Frost Aggro right now is kind of unplayable at your rank. So that is a significant change. That was the best deck in the game before the patch. Even at high MMR, it was entirely dominant. And now it's tier 3. And some meta trends, some possible future trends could lead it to be tier 4.
I know I'm early. I actually cannot wait for you to tell the listeners what you would recommend, because it is seriously some Twilight Zone stuff. Cannot wait for that moment.
So obviously when I see something like that, and then I see people saying, I'm going to talk about that later, saying nothing has changed, then it kind of drives me to tell, hey guys, you know, things are actually changing quite drastically. And Frost Aggro Death Knight is one of those examples. Now, I will say on the Clan of the Legend, it's still good. It's still one of the better decks out there. But again, it's kind of being inflated by people playing things like Naga Mage. It really helps that deck pick up free wins. And I'm not sure it's going to enjoy that. There are probably going to be better decks to use to climb to Legend with once the monthly reset hits. There are several decks that I would recommend over Frost, Aggro Death Knight on the Legend climb. So even at that rank, I don't think it's looking oppressively powerful. So that's kind of a big difference.
And it's interesting that the development of Demon Hunter and Druid, it definitely had a major impact on Frost, and it loses to Blood too. Now, Blood, every Death Knight deck got nerfed. I will say there is a rules interaction in Blood that changed that I feel like actually has relevance, but it's not enough to offset the impact of the nerfs, especially on Blood. That Triple Rune Discover thing is a huge deal to them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There are several matchups that I've noticed post-patch, especially Control Priest. I think it makes sense that Blood Death Knight lost grounded because when I played Control Priest against Blood Death Knight, and I dominated that matchup with the Control Priest, the occasions I lost is when they discovered another Mograine, and you cannot do that anymore. So that's kind of a big deal, but in terms of not being able to discover more Vampiric Blood, it definitely matters. When I look at Blood Death Knight, I see two different trends. At lower MMR, on the Climb the Legend, Blood Death Knight definitely got weaker. It got noticeably weaker throughout the board. It's still a good deck. It's still competitive, but compared to its like tier one, hard lock tier one before the patch, you remember the report, you remember the power ranking was tier one everywhere. It's kind of teetering on tier two-ish on the Legend Climb. So it's definitely weaker than it was before. However, at top Legend, it happens to counter some of the decks that are rising in play, most notably Spell Demon Hunter. So it's standing at top Legend kind of was offset. Like the nerfs were kind of offset by natural meta trends that are keeping Blood Death Knight around the 50% win rate mark. And again, not a top tier deck by any means, but it looks competitive. It looks fine. It's sticking around the 50% win rate mark at these ranks. So I think the experience of Blood Death Knight throughout ladder has kind of evened out. It is weaker on the Climb to Legend, where it was more of a problem because of its high prevalence. And on the other hand, at high MMR, it wasn't nuked. It's still pretty good. It's pretty competitive because it has some roles in the format. But again, Blood Death Knight forms Naga Mage. And if Naga Mage disappears, which is very likely to do, then it might have more difficulties picking up the easy wins. So Blood Death Knight looks pretty balanced to me. I think the nerfs, the Discover nerfs, were enough to make this deck a bit weaker in the late game, which I'm noticing. It's a bit weaker in the late game, while still having the impact in the aggressive, the faster matchups, where it's pretty good against faster decks, but not to the point where it's like completely dominating these decks and you cannot play. Like Pure Paladin has a very, very close matchup with Blood, for example. So
yeah, some of the matchups that I think like Unholy might have like is still not something you want to play into Blood as much. It's not unwinnable, but it's not what you want to play. And the rule change I was alluding to earlier, I think Unholy is probably where it's most impactful. So Blood Boil, the way it works now with both Banshee and Ripper, each tick counts. And before, it was all just batched as one big thing. So in particular, Arcanite Ripper on wide boards, it now just makes a really, really big lifesteal thing, whereas before it only increased by one. Small change will be notable if you play against like a lot of things that you're blood boiling. But generally speaking, if you're blood boiling a lot of things you were with a Ripper up, you were probably doing just fine.
Yeah, I mean, it is obviously a buff, but I'm not really seeing that this has such a huge impact. But overall, the nerfs definitely, when I look at the nerfs and I look at Frost Aggro and where it's placed and I look at Blood Control, the nerfs did a good job at toning down these decks without killing them, which is my favorite kind of nerf. And I think those are the nerfs that Team 5 should aim to do. Not kill decks that people find fun to play and are compelling, but tone them down to the point where they're not at risk of choking out other strategies. And I think that both Frost and Blood are kind of in this position where they're good decks, they're competitive, you can definitely do well with them, but they're not oppressively strong. So the balance changes absolutely had an impact. Now, I will say that the nerfs to Frost and Blood did help another Death Knight deck, which is Unholy. And Unholy is a deck that we kind of earmarked that could benefit from a nerf to Frost and Blood. And even though Unholy got hit itself with the nerf to Rowdy Fan on top of the Discover, but I will say the Discover nerf does not affect Unholy as much as it does for Frost and Blood, that's for sure. So it wasn't as impacted by the Discover nerf. And it really benefits from a potential decline in the performance and maybe the play rate too of Frost and Blood. And Unholy currently looks like the best Death Knight deck. It is not particularly close. It is the best Death Knight deck. And its play rate right now is something like 2%. Let me check. Over the last, since the patch, its play rate is 2 or 3% at most ladder brackets. So the deck is very underplayed, but very, very good. Now, obviously, I don't expect Unholy to be this good. It's really good. It's like tier one everywhere.
But it's also, if you want to talk about a deck that farms Naga Mage, the Bloodlust deck farms Naga Mage.
That's one thing. But in addition to that, Unholy is a deck that can get countered by removal. If you focus on, like, it doesn't have damage from hand. It's not like Frost Death Knight, where it's really hard to target because it has board presence, but it also has insane off-board damage with Frost Rune Sphere and Marrow Manipulator. Unholy, if you keep it off the board, it cannot deal damage to you. That's a pretty much a rule. On top of it, it does get highly inflated numbers because of its performance against really bad decks. Things like Naga Mage again. But also Druid decks that are rising in play are giving it some free food. Overall, when you look at its performances against the most settled and refined decks, even when you take Druid into account, that Druid is quite good right now. I don't think this deck is a particular threat to be a Tyrant. I don't think that Unholy, if it ever rose to like a 10-15% play rate, would maintain this kind of performance. So Unholy is currently benefiting from being slept on a bit, but it's really, really strong right now because of that. So if you want free wins, you can take Unholy and do really well. You will probably do better with Unholy compared to Frost at most ladder brackets right now. But it does depend on you playing a refined Unholy list. If you want a refined Unholy list, look no further than Wuling, the Unholy Death Knight God. And he has posted a list just yesterday, I believe, new list that counts Rowdy Fan and runs a Murloc package. Very intriguing list with like Mermy and Murlocula, which is drawn by Gorlock Ravager.
One Amalgam, one Gorlock, two Mermies, two Murloculas. That's the whole Murloc air quotes package. That's the whole thing.
I don't believe in one ofs. And but I will probably this list looks very promising, and I'll look into it obviously when I do my analysis tomorrow. But if you want a updated Unholy list, that list is showing a lot of promise. The Mermy Murlocula is cool because they're both Murlocs and undead. It's kind of neat. And the Ravager gives you reload, gives you card draw. So there's definitely something there. But Unholy looks really good right now. But again, if Unholy rises in play significantly, I think it can get countered. There are ways to punish that deck because it doesn't have off-board damage. So that's it for Death Knight. I think the nerfs overall definitely did a job. If you wanted to kill Death Knight and not make it viable, then maybe you would be unhappy about these changes. But if you wanted to keep these decks competitive, then I think the balance changes did what they were set out to do. You can play Frost, you can play Blood, you can play Unholy, you can do really well. The deck that does the best out of the three is the one that is being disrespected or ignored, or people are not thinking about it enough. But Unholy is the best Death Knight deck at the moment. So that is it for Death Knight. And now I want to talk about Demon Hunter.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited.
A lot of development going on in Demon Hunter. Surprising stuff that, and also some unfortunate stuff. So let's talk about first the unfortunate stuff. Team 5 locked in balance changes. They were locked in. It was happening Thursday. On Wednesday, literally a day before, a spell Demon Hunter deck started to pop up and gain traction. I think it was posted a couple of days before, and it started to gain traction. I started noticing it a day before the patch. And that's Spell Demon Hunter running Sinful Brand. Very, very similar to the deck, to the Quest Demon Hunter deck that was a menace during March of the Lich King, early March of the Lich King. And also, that deck had a revival when Final Showdown was unnerfed before rotation in the final week. That deck was looked like one of the best decks in the game. So Sinful Brand, even at 2 mana, turns out Pyroblast for 2 mana is still very good. And this deck is all about just, you know, throwing damage to face with Glaive Tar and a spell outcast package. On top of using like removal, things like security in order to deal with whatever minions the opponent develops in order to pressure it. You also have Silvermoon Arcanist and Unleash Fel in order to punish whiteboards. And then if they play a big minion, you just Sinful Brand it and burn them down. And this deck is unpleasant. This deck is extremely dominant against strategies that play minions because it just punishes you for playing minions in a way that's very unpleasant. And the matchup spread is concerning. This deck is really, really good. Now, I will say that this deck does have counters. And there are counters that exist in the format. And I'm hoping that these counters are going to help us, you know, tide us over until the next balance patch. Life gain. Armor gain, life gain, absolutely beat Spell Demon Hunter. Because unlike Relic DH, this deck doesn't really have a late game. It just burns you down. And if you heal up, it has no threats. It has no minion threats. So you just need to gain life. So Blood Death Knight works. This is the major reason why Blood Death Knight is still viable at top legend. It's because of this deck. It beats this deck, Vampiric Blood. Even if you cannot discover additional copies, having the extra health, having the healing, allows you to outlast the Spell Demon Hunter. It's not a dominant matchup, but Blood is favored. In addition, Tony Druid and Druid decks in general have the ability to gain armor. A lot of Druids right now, talk about it a little bit later because Druid is next, are running Chitinous Plating in order to counter Spell Demon Hunter. So Druid definitely has the tools available to beat Spell Demon Hunter. Final counter is Control Priest with additional life gain. I'll talk about it later, but you can build Control Priest to do well in this matchup. So control decks, defensive decks, attrition decks are effective at beating Spell Demon Hunter. If you don't play that kind of deck, matchups could be difficult. Spell Demon Hunter obliterates Miracle Rogue. It's the first counter I've seen, a significant counter to Frost Aggro Death Knight. That is another major reason why Frost Aggro Death Knight is tanking at top legend. It's both a combination of the balance patch, the balance changes that made Frost Aggro worse against several decks in the format, but it's also the rise of this new deck that is kind of countering Frost Aggro significantly. The matchup is over 60% favorite for the Spell Demon Hunter. This is something that we've been unfamiliar with Frost Aggro Death Knight thus far. This is the major counter to the deck. So it's very good at basically racing burn decks, right? Because it's the ultimate burn deck.
I will note that like people have said they have trouble playing it. And at first, I had some trouble figuring out, well, what am I supposed to do? What do I mulligan for? And then I realized about one game in against a Frost, oh, I just go face every turn and they die.
Glaivtar goes face. 99% of the time, you Glaivtar their face. You do not use damage to clear minions. You go face, face, and face. The only way you clear minions is with things, like, ideally, is with things that cannot hit face, like I-Beam, like Security, like Taste of Chaos. Those are your board control tools and Silvermoon Arcanist Unleash Fell. If you can... any sort of card that goes face that is damaged, you need to push face because this deck has a limited amount of damage and you need to be able to kill the opponent by the time you can Fel'Dorei Warband Sinful Brand. That puts them in lethal rage very often, if not outright killing them, and then you finish them off the next turn. That's the, like, this deck kills people on turn 7. Usually, at most, you're looking to kill opponents on turn 7. Because you Warband Sinful Brand on 6, and then you finish them off on 7. So every Mark of Scorn can go face, try to make it go face. Everything needs to go face. You don't care about if there's like one minion up from the opponent, just leave it up. Eventually, it's a Sinful Brand target. If they cannot race you, you ignore their minions. This is why this deck is unpleasant.
Yeah. And if you go wide against it, they just Reno with Unleash Fell, which is still a crazy card.
Yeah, they have Silvermoon Arcane, so you can't really go wide against it, and you can't really play a big threat against it. It kind of punishes you for playing stuff. It kind of punishes you for playing Hearthstone. This is why this deck is kind of unpleasant, and I expect it to get a bit nerfed as soon as possible. It's unfortunate, again, the timing that this deck came up. It's unfortunate, but it's something that Team 5 had little control over. They could not see this deck returning, and... because it didn't exist for 2 weeks after the expansion. These things happen. These things happen more than once. They happen every expansion that there's a deck that rises in play. Unfortunately, in this case, this is a very dominant deck. But again, if you want to counter spell, you can. There are several options. And the funny thing about this deck, as unhealthy and unpleasant as it is, it encourages control. It pushes control into the format. It makes control decks more viable. So... It's not pleasant, but it does something. It does do something for the format.
Wait a minute, hold on. Is there a new damage from hand deck, and as a result, Priest gets better again?
Possible, but yeah, that's what Priest does. But yeah, so that's Spell DH again. Deck, or like, if you want to play well with it, just go face. If in doubt, go face hard. This deck is very, very strong. But, you know, there are other stuff going on with Demon Hunter. I'll start with the old stuff. Relic Demon Hunter is suffering. It cannot win races against Spell Demon Hunter, so it kind of got displaced at Top Legend because of the rise of Spell. If Spell continues to trickle down through the rest of the ladder, that's going to affect Relic too. Relic still looks okay. It's not a bad deck. But I think it's the worst Demon Hunter deck right now, and there are more than two. Nothing has changed in terms of the best build. Run the VS build is very good. Just cut the fizzle, maybe for Queen Ajara. But the VS list that we had in the report was very, very strong and looked like the optimal way of playing. And especially when you run, like, if you're playing a Top Legend and you're playing against Sinful Brand, then Immolation Aura is not doing anything for you. So you might as well play more threats. So that's Relic. Outcast DH is looking very strong. This is a deck that if Death Knight was nerfed too hard, then it would be a potential problem and might dominate the format because it's very good against most other strategies. It just suffers against Blood and Frost and Spell Demon Hunter. Like... Spell Demon Hunter is going to be a common theme. It's a common issue. But Outcast is very good. It is quite strong. It's tier 1 or borderline tier 1 at every level of play. And it's doing well. Some new cards, interesting. Rancher. People are running more Rancher. I think that was a list from the tournament that we had in the previous week. Rancher looks pretty solid in this deck. I would recommend running it over Rowdy Fan and maybe cutting another card. Not sure about what the other card would be, but Rancher is a good candidate to be included in the list for the report this week. It's a new card that looks, new card in this deck that looks quite good. I'm impressed with Rancher. Okay, and finally, there's a new Demon Hunter deck. There's a new Demon Hunter deck that popped up, I think, very quickly after the patch. I believe Kibler was the one who initially popularized a big Demon Hunter list. World 8. World 8 is a Patreon supporter of VS. He's on the Discord channels. He optimized that Kibler deck list and he changed a few cards. And big Demon Hunter is popping. I think Ultaros was another VS Discord member.
He posted the Reddit thread. Really, really great guide on Reddit.
Yeah, he posted a good guide on the deck. From there, the deck was popularized, and it looks like the best deck in the game. It looks like, at some rank brackets, it is the best deck in the game. I don't think it's the best deck in the game at top legend, but it's still good there. It's still good at top legend, but it's the best deck in the game. At multiple rank brackets, I'm climbing the legend. If somebody asks me right now, Zacko, what is the best deck to climb the legend with? The answer would be big Demon Hunter.
I just don't know how to process this information. Like, I'm going to sort decks per class, and the top one has a Brutal Annihilan in it, two copies. I'm like, okay, well, I guess that's just what we do now.
Yeah, this deck is very, very strong. It's good against Death Knight, against a multitude of strategies. It's very hard to actually counter this deck. It's, I think maybe Paladin has a close matchup against it, against, like, I think Totem Shaman is the big counter for this deck.
And Undead Priest, I think, is all right?
It's a close matchup. I guess you can fight. But this deck is just very, very good. I think Miracle Rogue might be favored against it at top legend, and that's kind of it. Because, like, you need to accelerate against it. You need to beat it before things like Face Hunter, maybe. You need to snowball early against the big Demon Hunter, because once Evoker comes down, there it's kind of hard to deal with. And the thing is, I'm not sure it's the most optimal build. There might be stuff like this deck plays Treasure Guard. And admittedly, Treasure Guard is good in this deck. And the reason why this deck runs Treasure Guard and not School Teacher in order to activate Predation is because you need a 3-drop. And you have a 4-drop with Raging Fell Screamer, and it kind of clashes with School Teacher. Because you don't want a School Teacher on 4. You want a Raging Fell Screamer. You want to keep Raging Fell Screamer in the mulligan and play Evoker early. If you coin Fell Screamer into Evoker on the coin, the stack is like Fell Screamer, coin Fell Screamer into Evoker is nuts. So you don't really need a 4-drop. So they just play Treasure Guard. There's some experimentation. I'm not able to comment on them that yet. That cuts Athena and Predation and Treasure Guard in order to run Crush Claw Enforcer. You run like one Crush Claw Enforcer in order to tutor your Evoker. That is also an idea, so that Evoker is consistently found, because Evoker is the best card in the deck by far. This is the enabler of the deck. This is why this deck wins. So you really want to find that card. So I am wondering about Crush Claw, but you know, you need to cut a lot of pretty good cards, Athena, Predation. I'm not sure if that's correct, but people are trying that out. At least I can see a little bit of it. But the list that World 8 has refined looks really, really good and really, really dominant. You even have late game with Astralor. You just slap Astralor in this deck, and it kind of is able to win even if all of its threats are dealt with. And Felrin is just a card that you run in every Demon Hunter deck at this point because it's so good, because the Outcast pool is insane. And what's nice about it is that Dispose of Evidence, which is a card that I believe World 8 added to the Kibler build, allows you to shuffle out a big demon from your hand back to your deck. So it has a utilization. It's not just gives you damage and ability to deal with early threats. It also kind of helps you correct your bad draws, right? So yeah, it just looks good. This deck just looks insane. And obviously you run Unleash Fel with Silvermoon Arcanist, and all Fel breaks loose if it resurrects a Zilag. That's insane. I've personally in Relic DH, sometimes when I play Taste of Chaos, I just get all Fel Breaks loose because I run a Zillag in the build. So you just run Zillag and you resurrect it. And if you resurrect Zillag itself, and you don't low roll on the stags, then you get a full board Zillag, which is insane. So deck is good. Play it. Farm with it. It's nuts right now. Again, at top legend, the Demon Hunter deck to play is probably Spell Demon Hunter. But on the climb, big Demon Hunter is the truth. So, yeah. Natural meta developments are still happening, and this is one of the discovered decks. Unfortunately, this is a Demon Hunter deck, so in terms of portrait visibility, right, you run into more Demon Hunters, so you don't really feel like the meta is changing. I get that sentiment. I understand it completely, but this deck is entirely different from the other Demon Hunter decks. It's completely different. It's a different playstyle.
Well, almost completely different. Almost completely different. There are two things that every Demon Hunter deck is doing at least one of. One is Sathino Predation, and one is Arcanist Unleash.
Yeah.
Three of four of these decks have both. Outcast DH does not play Arcanist Unleash. So if you're wondering where they're probably looking for the next patch in probably 3.5 weeks or so, I would imagine those two things are where they have opportunity for some power wiggle room.
I hope they actually don't touch Unleash Fel Arcanist. I think that combo is fine as a right now. The thing is, before rotation, Arcanist was used to also deal burst damage to your face with Fel Barrage, but as a way to defend against aggressive decks, I think I'm fine with the existence of Unleash Fel Arcanist. That package, by the way, is not really an outlier in terms of power in any of the decks. It just offers good defense. I think part of the reason why Demon Hunter is good is that it has functional late game. I'll talk about it in more depth later, but many of the classes in the format just don't have functional late game, and the ones that do are the ones that see more play and are obviously being targeted. I'm more hoping that other classes would be as fleshed out and as functional as the Demon Hunter, the Druid, the Rogue, the Death Knight decks are currently. But that's another discussion. We'll talk about it a bit later. I wouldn't be rushing to nerf Demon Hunter, but obviously if this doesn't change and Demon Hunter is extremely prevalent, extremely powerful, and nobody finds a good answer to it, those cards would be something that you could potentially look at. But I think it's early to say three and a half weeks. There's more time people to find solutions, but yeah, obviously Demon Hunter is strong. But there's different Demon Hunter decks. The decks are not different. They play very differently. They feel very differently. Outcast is not like Relic, and Big D is definitely not like those two.
Oh no, the class is in a good spot right now, and I don't think that it's, like, really the only issue that I have is the deck that punishes you for doing anything except for sitting back and gaining life.
Spell DH is, I see it as a deck that just kind of doesn't allow you to play Hearthstone, which is a deck that I expect to get nerfed, and it would be a correct thing to do because, Big DH, you know what it's going to do. There are ways to answer it. You need to run removal to deal with the big threats and the big Evoker turn, or you punish it early by rushing it. There are ways to attack it, right? Relic DH, there are definitely ways to attack it. Outcast DH, there are ways to deal with it. It's a good deck, but it does have its counters. Spell DH is like, you either gain an insane amount of life or you just can't be favored against it. That's kind of my issue with it. But yeah, we'll see. I wish that other classes in the game would be as diverse and as functional as Demon Hunter is right now. That's kind of what, instead of like knocking down Demon Hunter, I would have loved to see other classes be as competent at winning Hearthstone games. But yeah, let's move on. I think Demon Hunter has a lot of options, and I'm pretty sure that there's something that appeals to anyone within the class, especially those that want to piss the opponent off. Spell DH is the deck for you.
All right. Druid.
Okay. So Druid is the other class in the format that I think has a functional late game, and this is the reason why it's prevalent and popular. In addition to Demon Hunter, Druid is doing quite well, and Druid is also diversifying. There's been a lot of discussion about Tony Druid and Anubricon, and you'll find out, surprising trend, is that the best Druid deck doesn't even run Anubricon.
He did it again. Jambre did it again.
The best Druid deck doesn't run Summer Flower Child. It doesn't run these cards, and it wins this much. Yeah, Jambre did it again. Jambre took Mask Reveler, Stoneborn General, and Neptulon, and found it and put it in another deck in another class. And this deck is popping. Big Druid with Death Blossom Whomper, a card that was buffed in the balance patch, is looking quite good. You run Hedge Maze, you run Whomper.
And you add the Jambre package of Revelers and Neptulon.
Yeah, and that deck has great scam potential. And unlike Tony Druid, so the reason why currently, this might not last, but currently Big Druid is outperforming Tony Druid. The reason is the aggressive matchups. It's not like Big Druid wins these matchups, but it does better. It does significantly better. I think it does 10% better against Pure Paladin, for example. Still not on favorite, but it doesn't completely roll over. It does better against Miracle Rogue compared to Tony Druid. So, because it has its own scam potential. So the deck, even though it doesn't run a Hero Power Package, doesn't run Summer Flower Child, doesn't have an Urbicon, has great late game because of the scam potential with Cecily. It's got good defensive tools. I would look into running another copy of Drum Circle, because this deck runs Timber Tambourine, and it runs Drum Circle in order to stabilize, and you have such a consistent ability to output threats to be able to buff on turn 7 that I would seriously look at a second copy of that card instead of like a low impact card like a Lunar Eclipse, something like that. That might be an adjustment that I make tomorrow. But you have a lot of stabilizing potential. This deck runs Kolak. It runs the turtle. And it's good because you can hedge maze it. You can hedge maze the shell and gain 8 armor. And it's so hard to beat that as an aggressive deck that tries to burn you down. It's, let me tell you, it's pretty good against Frost Death Knight to do that. Like, you have armor, you have scam potential. They only have 2 Frostrum's Fury. Now, you have insane late game, even though you don't run Anubricon. So, Blood Death Knight gets plastered. I think the one removal deck that beats you is Control Priest, because it's got silence on top of removal.
Can you stop saying that all episode long? People are going to play it.
Unfortunately, there's more to come from that direction, but we'll get to that eventually.
I know.
But Big Druid is legit. Again, its strength compared to Tony Druid is meta dependent. It's not always going to be better than Tony Druid. It's a young deck. I'll have to see what happens in this report. But I will say that there are recognition challenges when it comes to Druid. I can separate Big from Tony, absolutely. But there's some issues with Ozumat and Big Druid. There's an Ozumat Druid, you remember that. That also runs Hedge Maze, but it doesn't really run like the Whomper package. It just runs Hedge Maze for Explosive Sheep and Ozumat. So that's a bit of a challenge to separate that with Big Druid. I've done that. It seems to work okay. But obviously, it's fluid, and I'll have to keep making sure that everything is okay on that end. But yeah, like, Ozumat Druid is also a very competitive deck. It looks quite good. There is an issue with Ozumat Druid and like mill builds of Ozumat that might be more challenging to separate from it. So Ozumat might statistically look worse, but that doesn't indicate that the best build is worse. Like, the best Ozumat Druid build is looking quite strong and very competitive compared to Tony and Big. So those are 3 competitive Druid decks that are indicative that Druid does have late game functionality. There are many options. Unfortunately, they're within 1 portrait. And, you know, later in the podcast, I'll talk about why it's so focused on a few portraits. But yeah, there's options there. So that is Druid, Ozuma, Tony, and Big. Big currently might be the best one, but again, it might change there until the report. I don't know. It's close. Okay. Next class. What is the next class hat?
Priest.
Oh, it's Priest. Hat is so upset.
At least they kept Benedictus, Shadow Priest, or Undead Priest, whatever you want to call it. It's still good. It's still a good deck. I appreciate it's very that. Good. It's very good.
It's very good. It's one of the best decks in the game. It's a top three deck in the game at most ladder brackets. I think at top legend, Undead Priest is kind of struggling against Spell Demon Hunter and Outcast Demon Hunter. But, you know, throughout most of ladder, where these decks are not as popular, Undead Priest is cooking. It looks very strong. It's a very good deck. It didn't get touched by the balance changes. The nerf to Frost and, to a lesser extent, Blood also helps it. If Frost was nerfed harder, this deck might have been too good. Because what I am noticing in the Undead Priest, and what you can see the impact here of the Death Knight changes, is that the Swarm build has leaped ahead. Like, you have two variants. Those variants looked equally competitive. Before the balance changes, post-balance changes, there's only one way to go, and that's the Swarm build. Because Death Knight doesn't punish you as hard for flooding the board, there's less of Death Knight, and Death Knight is expected to decline further to some degree, which means that the Swarm build is kind of getting better and better. It's also better against Demon Hunter in general, so that's the way to go. You go Swarm. The build that we have in the report, we couldn't really refine it and tweak it further. It has some value cards that I'm questioning. Things like Amalgam, maybe a Boneflinger is better. Maybe there's some other undead. Nerubian Vizier. Why is this deck not running Vizier?
The pool kind of sucks. The pools, maybe. I tried it. That, like, you end up with cards that are not Mindseer quite frequently, and there's no Void Shard in the pool. Like, you end up with Fight Over Me or Harmonic Pop or whatever, and it's just not what you want to do. I tried it out. Like, it wasn't bad. But it wasn't exciting, yeah.
I'll definitely look into it, but the Swarm build looks very strong. This is the most powerful. The Burn build does not make sense anymore. It's competitive, it's okay, but it's way worse at this point. So just run the Swarm build that we have a pre-patch in the VS report, and it's very good. Unfortunately, it's not particularly exciting because it's not new, right? It's not a new thing.
It's exciting that it's still around. I'm excited by that. I thought it was just going to go away, and I miss Void Touch Attendant every single time I play this deck, but it still kills people. I'm down with that. I understand that people are not thrilled that that it's from last expansion, and it uses some of the new cards, but it's still a thing we've seen before. But, like, I don't know. It's sometimes we see things we've seen before.
Yeah, it's okay, but you're a little bit of a weirdo who really, really likes Shadow Priest, and most people do not care about that. They care about what I'm going to talk about next. The Priest mains.
You're going to call me a weirdo and then you're going to speak to the Control Priest players? Is that what you're doing?
I mean, you already accept most of the Priest mains had are Control players. They are Control, Hard Control, Chuck It, Hearthstone Control players. And Control Priest looks good. Hat, I'm sorry to say, but Control Priest looks good. Now, in typical Control Priest fashion, it looks better at top legend compared to rest of ladder. It's some of it is player skill, but a lot of it has to do with builds. Control Priest players at high MMR are just better and quicker at attacking the format. And what does the format ask you to do right now, especially at top legend? Life gain. You're starting to see Control Priest players run Armor Vendor. Why would you run Armor Vendor in Control Priest? Because it makes it more difficult for the Spell Demon Hunter to burn you down. They're also running Sun Fury Clergy to just heal up and top themselves off and prevent the Demon Hunter from... they cannot OTK. So sustained life gain is very effective. On top of it, you've got Disruption. You can run Dirty Rat. Dirty Rat is becoming an important card in this format because of the popularity of Druid. Though be careful not to play Dirty Rat against a big Druid. Be careful. Wait a bit. See what kind of Druid you're playing against because that could horribly backfire. But against Tony Druid, Dirty Rat is a good card, obviously. And yeah, you've got the removal. You can be good against Unholy, which is going to gain traction. The life gain is hopeful against Frost Death Knight, and Frost Death Knight is getting weaker, so it's more reliant on the burn to get pushed through because it cannot, you know, scam Discover as hard as it used to. And, you know, Rowdy Fan pushes less damage, so sustain is working better here, and it's going to be a challenge to refine Control Priest. And there are a lot of bad Control Priests out there that drag the win rate down, or not bad Control Priests, but Control Priest decks that are not fine-tuned to the evolving format. So I'll be working on that and trying to make Control Priest as best as it can be, so Hat will get triggered. But yeah, Control Priest is looking better. This is a deck that before the balance changes looked unplayable. It was unplayable. And now it's looking tier 2. Tier 2 Hat.
I'm glad that my priest friends have something to do. I'm glad the control players have something to do.
Blood Death Knight is good. Control Priest is good. You're cooking. Yeah, Control Warrior, not so much, but you're cooking. There's something to cook. Also, Control Priest is very good against, hinted that. Very good against Blood. Very good counter to Blood, especially now that they cannot discover a second Mulgrane. That is very impactful, and I've noticed it in the matchup. It's actually fascinating how you can see the spike in the performance. Blood gets countered by Control now, Control Priest now. You cannot, without the second Mulgrane, it's very hard. The Control Priest has infinite value with Svalna, and you do not, you have a lot of value, you have a lot of discover, but you do not have infinite. And that's what Priest does have. So Control Priest is very good at targeting the field, and if you build a deck list to target the field effectively, you can cook. So, Control Priest looking good. I'm really liking this deck right now, and its position in the meta looks very good. So, this is a deck that unplayable before the patch, pretty much, and looking quite good after the patch. And thanks to meta changes and but also nerfs, nerfs to Frost Blood helped it. Natural meta developments are also helping it. It's a deck that's good against Big Demon Hunter. It's good against Spell Demon Hunter. I'm not sure how many decks can. I don't think there's a deck that's good against both. I think that's the only deck that can counter both Big and Spell. That might be relevant. So, and Relic is declining, right? Relic the Edge is a very tough matchup for Control Priest naturally, but Relic is getting obliterated by its Demon Hunter cousins. So that helps it a lot. So, looking good.
We're an hour in through 4 class, and we've talked about I don't know how many decks.
Tons of decks.
We are going to enter the second half of the show here, and the decks going forward, every deck has something, but a lot of them have one thing or some experiments that we can speak to. The first 4 classes have a bunch of options, and especially DK and DH, but as we continue, there will be a bunch of experiments that we will either write off or say, you know, come back to us, we got to cook up and see what's going on. And usually each class here has at least one thing that you can specifically do when it's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Post-balance patch, I will say it now, every class in the game has a competitive deck, at least one. Now, the problem might be what that deck is and how enticing or how attractive it is to players. But every class is competitive right now. I will talk about... We first talk about the most questionable one, which is Mage. The one class that I think has the worst overall win rate. But again, overall win rate doesn't say much. It just tells you that a lot of people are playing bad Mage decks. And one of the bad Mage decks is Naga Mage. So Naga Mage pre-patch had win rate around 30%. It got the Spite Last Siren buff, but that's pretty much what it got. So one card, obviously it's the most important card in the deck, lifted its win rate by over 10%. That's respectable. But it's not enough, because the win rate was 30. So now its win rate is 40. That's not enough to be viable. That's not enough to be competitive. Unfortunately, a lot of people hyped up Naga Mage. I think it was out of nostalgia. They liked the deck. They hoped it would be good again. But it's not. I will say one thing that's interesting about Naga Mage. If you want to lose less light show is the way. It's kind of weird that I'm saying this.
That wouldn't have been what I expected.
Yeah. Like, you probably want to run light show. But, you know, forget about it. Like, the deck is so bad that there's no point even saying that. Like, if this deck ever becomes good, the answer might be different, right? I don't know. Like, it doesn't say much when I say that. So I don't want to give you a tip on how to play Nagamage. Just don't play this deck. It is terrible. Only Habu Gabu can win with it. Only Habu Gabu.
I love how he takes some time off from Hearthstone, comes back to Twitter, posts an unplayable mage deck with a 65% win rate. It's like he never left.
Yeah. We missed Habu Gabu, one of the innovators of the community. I hope he sticks around, even though Nagamage is bad. I hope he keeps winning with Nagamage. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff that Mage is trying to do. It got some buffs, so people are experimenting with the buffs. Most of the things are not working. However, there is one thing that is working, which is the Spooky Mage with the Cosmic Keyboard build. That deck is quite good. That deck is quite good. And it might even continue to get better. It's definitely competitive right now. Definitely tier 2-ish. You're not going to see this in the stats very well. Aggregated stats are not going to show it because there's a lot of jank going on. People are running, Spooky Mage builds with Romath and Kel'Thuzad. Like, more greedy stuff with Azara, Romath, Kel'Thuzad in order to have a stronger late game. I don't think Spooky Mage needs a stronger late game. You're a Frozen Touch deck. You just make skeletons for Frozen Touch and you throw those Frozen Touches to face. Cosmic Keyboard helps you pressure the opponent through the board more while you're playing spells, but your main win condition is Frozen Touch. I don't think you need to add more than that. Like, Romath is very slow, and Kel'Thuzad, as cool as the card is, it's slow. It's not particularly quick. So a lot of people are experimenting in that direction, which is going to hurt the overall win rate of Spooky Mage in the aggregated stats and Mage overall. But the Cosmic Keyboard build is very good. I am noticing people are running Flame Geyser as a sixth spell. It looks pretty nice. Other people are experimenting with Shooting Star. It's also an option. I'll look into it. But in general, Spooky Mage with Cosmic Keyboard is very good. The aggro build with like Audio Medic and Vicious Thizzard Spear kind of fell off. Because Mage is not as pressured to attack early in the current meta, and it kind of scale a bit with the skeletons, with Deathborn, with other stuff, like with the burn, with Aegwynn and Frozen Touch. It's a really good win condition, and it's a very good win condition. It's a good enough win condition in slow matchups too. Like, you have a lot of damage. Your damage potential is very, very high, so you don't really need the Romath and the extra greed in order to do well in ladder. So this is a very competitive Mage deck that exists. And it's viable. It's just that it's just aggregated with a lot of garbage. And most of the Mage decks that are currently on ladder are really bad. It's Light Show stuff and Naga stuff and the Casino stuff. It's just bad.
Yeah. There's a little bit of Mech Mage, and it looks like no one at Legend is ever going to play it, so it doesn't matter. It looks fine.
Yeah, Mech Mage is okay, but it's kind of meh, and it's not even that good, so... You know, if you have an aggressive deck that's kind of meh and not good, then it's not going to see play. For an aggressive deck to see play, things really need to line up for it. It needs to be very, very good. It cannot be mediocre. And that's what Mech Mage is.
Yep. And at High Legend, it also needs to play a lot of cards in one turn. Because if it's just a card on curve, even if it looks as good as Unholy currently does, like, people just won't play it that much.
Yeah. It has one play that's kind of exciting, but that's kind of it. So again, Mage, don't be fooled by the overall aggregated win rate of the class. It's not the worst class in the game. There's definitely a good deck out there. It just doesn't see much play, so it's hard to spot it on the radar. But the Cosmic Keyboard Spooky Mage is legit. Okay?
Okay. Well, that's Mage.
Paladin.
Let's talk Paladin.
Yeah, Paladin, I think, didn't change much. They opted not to buff Big Paladin, so Big Paladin, there's no reason for it to be better. Pure Paladin is quite strong right now. I would say Pure Paladin on the Climb of Legend, one of the best decks in the game. It really got helped by the nerf to Frost. Frost, I thought it was a tough matchup. So it got nerfed, and Frost is a little bit weaker, and I did notice that the matchup is a little bit, a tiny bit better for the Paladin. And it's doing work. Pure Paladin, you know how Pure Paladin is. Early meta, lots of jank. It stomps. It stomps. It's doing well. But at top Legend, it's going to dive as it usually does. Maybe tier 2, maybe tier 3. It depends. It's good against Druid, not so much against other refined stuff. So the question is, how much can it get carried by Druid? Because if Druid is not around, Pure Paladin at top Legend is unplayable. It's terrible against Spell Demon Hunter. It's terrible against Outcast. Terrible against Frost. Against Miracle Rogue, it's kind of a 50-50. It's not good against Undead Priest either. It beats bad decks. It beats Naga Mage. It beats Control Warrior. It's a good counter still to Big Druid. But it doesn't beat the refined established stuff. So people look at, you know, Pure Paladin win rates on ladder, and they look at like Diamond and Platinum to see it's OP, and they're saying nerf Pure Paladin. But if you nerf Pure Paladin, it's going to be unplayable at the competitive level. It's just not going to be relevant, and people already at the competitive level don't really like playing Pure Paladin. So leave it alone. I think it's fine that Pure Paladin is one of the best decks to climb the Legend with. It's a friendly deck for new players to hone their Hearthstone skill and learn about fundamentals. And it has a cool win condition with Countess that gives them the opportunity to play funny legendaries that they may not have in their collection. I think that Pure Paladin in general, I've said it before, the current iteration of Pure Paladin is inspired design. I really love the Countess. I really love what it does for new players. And it's just great. So I think just leave it alone. Yeah, it's really good against at bronze, but we shouldn't completely balance around bronze. And even there, the deck is not like, there are a lot of really powerful decks that farm the field at bronze, right? But as you climb ladder, as you gain more experience, as you learn to play better, you're going to do better against Pure Paladin. It's not really a threat. There is also Mech Paladin. The build of Pure Paladin, I don't know if it's going to change. I'll look into it. I don't expect significant changes there, right? There's nothing that really encourages it to change its makeup. Order in the Court, I'll look at it again. We'll see. Maybe Order in the Court goes in at some point. Mech Paladin also exists. It's kind of Pure Paladin, but worse in every way. So it's hard to justify playing it, even though it's still quite good at low ranks of ladder. At top Legend, it's going to hit a wall, obviously. So, nothing exciting or new over there.
Well, sounds like Paladin. Now, Rogue is pretty far down the list. Is this not a meta Tyrant?
No, absolutely not. I've seen a lot of concerns over Miracle Rogue post-patch, but those concerns have been tempered by the rise of Spell Demon Hunter. Well, it's a different problem, right? It's a new problem. But Miracle Rogue really does not want to run into Spell DH. Spell DH just burns it down. Miracle Rogue obviously has no life gain, no defensive tools.
Concoctions aren't really good against it, right? Like, that's the thing. Deadly shots don't matter.
Not just concoctions. Even if you get the damage concoctions, let's say you just high roll the damage concoctions, you're not able to kill the Demon Hunter fast enough. They just race you. And you don't really have minion pressure.
And the only minion pressure you have gets you branded into next week.
Yes, and the one card, like the ghosts, they just get branded, and you take infinite.
Back in my day, those ghosts had stealth. Different time.
Yeah, and now it's even worse, because they don't have stealth, so they just sinful brand your ghost, and you just die. So, Miracle Rogue, tough matchup against Spell DH, kind of knocked it down. It's still okay, it's tier 2-ish.
It's going to go down when Control Priest picks up, isn't it?
Control Priest? I think it depends on what the makeup of Control Priest is going to be. But obviously, things like the Lighted Burns and Cannibalize and all the life gain, probably not going to be kind for Miracle Rogue. So it's probably going to struggle in that matchup as well. And in addition to that, Big Druid, he's a tough matchup. Like, Miracle Rogue is
very good against Tony Druid. We know that. Very good at snowballing that. But it cannot deal with like Stoneborn General scams in the mid game. It's quite a difficult thing. And I wouldn't say Big Druid dominates this matchup, but it's like 55 to the Druid, which is very, you know, it's unfamiliar territory. You've got a ramping Druid deck that actually does well into Miracle Rogue. So if the makeup of Druid changes a little bit, shifts into more Big Druids, it's not like Tony's going to disappear or things like Ozumat. But if there's more Big Druid in the scene, that Miracle Rogue may not have as good of a time against the class as it did before. So Miracle Rogue doesn't seem like a deck that's dangerous to me. Seems like the deck that's going to be good. If you enjoy playing it, you can do well with it. But it's not dominant. It's definitely weaker than it was before the patch, despite the fact that it didn't get nerfed. And despite the fact that one of its counters, which is Frost, also got nerfed. It just got replaced by another counter, a harder counter, which is Spell DH. So that's the story for Miracle Rogue. Unfortunately, there's not much else going on. There is one thing going on that I'm going to mention that actually looks to have some promise. Obviously, the combo package didn't get meaningful buff, so there's nothing new there. And Pyro Rogue kind of sucks. Secret Rogue is, I think, got worse because the Relic DH are kind of disappearing, and that was a good matchup for Secret Rogue, while matchup like Spell DH is pretty bad. In contrast to that, and also Blood is kind of dropped a bit in its play rate, and Frost may drop in its play, though Frost is not a particularly good matchup, not a good example, but Secret Rogue looks like it's fallen off quite a bit because of meta changes. But there is one deck that looks to have promise after the patch. The deck that did get one buffed card.
Menagerie Rogue. That is
Blinktron.
Menagerie Rogue.
Yeah, Menagerie Rogue looks, again, sample size low, but based on its initial sample size, looks very competitive. Now, again, I'm not sure how much people are excited about playing Menagerie Rogue, but if you want to try it out, take the list from Aqua, who iterated the list that, you know, was on ladder pre-patch. I'm not sure about the Shadow Step. I'm very questioning the Shadow Step. I'm even questioning the Zilliax. Maybe Breakdance is better than Shadow Step. I'm not sure. I'll look into it, but the list is a good start. It's a good starting point. The Potion Belts give you some card draw. It's not something that you really want on turn two in this deck, but it does give you some card drawing ability to reload the board. It also allows you to pressure. Sometimes you play, if you do have the Potion Belt on two, you can try to summon three drops on three and kind of get ahead and try to pressure the opponent that way. So this deck got nerfed with Rowdy Fan nerf. It got nerfed, yet it still somehow got better because, you know, space opened up. Frost is not as dominant as it used to be. And it's pretty good at fighting for board. And since a card like Jolly Roger really helps you get ahead early. So yeah, Menagerie Rogue looks okay. Again, I'm not sure how, like, top legend players are not going to care about this. I know they're not, because this is an aggro deck. It's kind of an initiative-focused deck. It doesn't have, you know, exciting late-game combos or things that you build up towards. It's a good deck. It's definitely playable and looks competitive based on its current sample. We'll see how much traction it gets. I'm just floating it out there that it's if you lack Menagerie decks, then Rogue might be the best one. So yeah. But that's kind of it for Rogue. It's like it's got Miracle and got this Menagerie.
Any of the like pirate weapon decks, like they're
no. They're bad. They're bad. Okay. They're not good. Like Pirate Rogue, there's the guitarist rogue, it's not good. These decks are not playable. Okay, Warrior.
Oh boy. So Warrior is very popular because people are really thirsty for this to be a thing. And I am personally prepared, Zach. I am personally prepared to tell people for the third expansion in a row that Enrage is fine, and then they will ignore that, not play it, and complain about the class. I'm ready.
Look, the sentiment with Warrior is that for a lot of players, it doesn't matter if Warrior has a competitive deck if it's not control. If it's not control Warrior, they don't care. I'm not attacking them for it. They have a perfectly, like, these are different decks. They like the Control Warriors style. And they're mad that Control Warrior is not viable. It is a completely legitimate reason to be mad. But I will say that Control Warrior got a lot better because of the patch. It's just that it was so bad before that even though it gained like over 10% in its win rate, thanks to the buffs to the Rifts and Shield Block, it got 10% better. It's still not good enough. But there, it's a step. These are buffs that are going to help Warrior become viable, potentially viable in the future, with perhaps a few new cards. Maybe not a lot, because I do think that Control Warrior is closer to being viable than people think it is. It's actually probably just two cards away. The main issue for Warrior is a lack of a turn three play. If From the Depth was unnerfed right now, I'm pretty sure Black Rock and Roll Control Warrior is a good deck. They didn't do that. They're scared of doing that for a good reason. Personally, I would have liked to see an experimentation of putting From the Depth to 3 and making it discount by 2. Like making the effect weaker, but keeping it at 3 mana.
Oh, that's interesting. I could see that.
Yeah, what kills From the Depth right now is that the fact that it's 4 mana. And Control Warrior with Black Rock and Roll already passes turn 1, does nothing on turn 1, does nothing on turn 2. The fact that it does nothing on turn 3 as well kind of hurts it significantly. I also see it in the data. I analyze replays. The big problem is lack of a meaningful turn 3 play. If they had From the Depth, this would not be a problem. I think you would be able to mulligan for From the Depth because you're a big deck, right? And sometimes you win with Black Rock and Roll. But if you have the option to From the Depth on 3 and maybe scam something a bit earlier, like play a Stalwart, a 6 drop on turn 4 and kind of try to stabilize, I think that would make the deck a lot more viable. So I would have liked to explore that kind of buff. Like make From the Depth, revert the From the Depth nerf, but maybe make the nerf lighter and give Control Warrior a meaningful turn 3 play. That probably puts it in a competitive spot. Right now, it doesn't seem competitive, but again, it's a tier 4 deck rather than a tier 8 deck at the moment. And I will say that a lot of the Warrior decks right now are unrefined. Very unrefined. What is unrefined to me? To me, unrefined is when you run Last Stand and Frightened Flunky in the same deck. I mean, come on, guys. Surely that can't be right.
Oh.
You cannot tell me that running Last Stand, you're running Last Stand in order to tutor a taunt in order to double its stats, and you put Frightened Flunky in your deck?
Hello?
Surely not. Surely that's not correct. I think a direction that people need to explore more is even cut things like Sword Eater and really curate your taunts for you to have impactful taunts off of Last Stand on turn 6. Stalwart, Zilliax, and maybe Lava Gorger. And the reason why Lava Gorger is still capped because Naga Giant is actually good now. Because if you run Naga Giant with Rifts, like the Rifts help you discount the Naga Giant. And by the way, Bridge Rift is a really good card right now. It gives you an alternative turn 5 play to Black Rock and Roll. So the buffs definitely help. The Rifts are kind of good now. I do think that Chorus Rift is a good, it could be buffed to 2. I wish they would have explored doing that as well. Just buff every Rift by a mana. Like discount all of it by 1 mana. That would make, I think, the Rift package really, really good. Maybe push Warrior a bit over the top. But again, lack of turn 3 play. This is what's holding this archetype back. This is why it's tier 4. I'm pretty sure it would have been competitive if it had a meaningful and good turn 3 play. It's really lacking that. But if I wanted to explore Control Warrior further, which I will do tomorrow when I do recognition, when I do refinement analysis for the report, I would look at a Naga Giant build that runs a very small number of taunts to curate Last Stand and try to find other cards. Maybe try to find an alternative and meaningful turn 3 play that gives you some proactivity, that allows you to bridge in your turn 4. You've got turn 4s and you've got turn 5s. You need a turn 3 in this deck. You need to do something on turn 3. I am wondering what that can be. other than an unearthed from the depth, which is my personal wish. But yeah, that's control. When it comes to other warrior archetypes, I'm seeing competitive potential. Enrage, I think, is good. Enrage warrior with a low curve looks quite good right now. If you look at aggregated stats, you're not going to spot it. But if you look at within the Enrage Warrior archetype, which admittedly doesn't see much play, the low curve builds are doing good work. You know, the Crooked Cook, Rancher stuff is looking quite good. On top of that, Menagerie Warrior, which got the Power Slider buff. Power Slider is a much better card now. It got a pretty minor, it's a meaningful buff, but now it went from being a mid card to one of the best cards in the deck. And on top of it, people are trying to refine Menagerie Warrior. My recommendation, run a lower curve. People are running Mermy and Glacial Shard. I really like that. More one drops. And the one drops are good. The reason is, first of all, it allows you to get ahead on the board. The other thing that helps you is it just helps you activate Roaring Applause. If you have more stuff in play, you can reload more and you can find your one amalgam band and you can find your more impactful plays. You can find your Voon. So if you flood the board with like Rancher and a lot of one drops, that is cooking something. So Menagerie Warrior right now doesn't seem that great, but with some refinement, I think it can be competitive. Again, the main thing is, are people excited for it? Probably not. Especially content creators and top legend players, they don't seem to care about these decks very much. But Warrior does have two decks that are competitive. It's just not the deck that people want to be competitive. That is the unfortunate part.
I mean, I'm happy about it, but, you know, I guess I'm a weirdo.
You like the aggressive decks of Warrior and Priest. That is a bit of a weirdo hat. I mean, I'm not saying weird, but it's an exception. You're an exceptional person, hat.
Thank you. Nice recovery.
You're one of a kind.
I'm going to remember that the next time I piss my wife off.
Okay. Shaman.
I'm so sad. Flow Rider's such a rad card, but the deck is not a deck. It's just still a pile of cards that doesn't do anything.
It has no direction, hat, and a few buffs are not going to fix that.
It's not a deck. It's just cards.
How does it win? Like, this Jive Insect Criminal lineup cope, this is just not it. The Shaman set, just the Overload Shaman set, just has no purpose. Like, it's not purposeful. There's no direction. You can't expect to win with Pack the Houses, like in the late game matchups against decks with removal. That's not going to get the job done. It's just, you know, they buff things, and those buffs mattered in the sense of Overload went from low 30s to high 30s, right? It's a better deck. But it's still completely unplayable because it cannot win late game matchups. It just doesn't have a direction, a purpose, a win condition that is a reliable one. It doesn't have functionality there. So it just can't be viable. This is something that you cannot solve with buffs. You can only solve with new cards. Like, it needs to do something in the late game that is meaningful and threatening. And it doesn't have that right now. But I will say that Shaman is competitive. But again, the competitive Shaman deck that's very, very good is a Shaman deck that people are less excited about. They're not. It also doesn't involve, you know, Festival of Legend cards. It is Totem Shaman. And Totem Shaman, let me tell you, is very, very powerful right now.
It's really strong, has some really cool plays. Like, there are times when I get my board cleared, then I just do Anchored Totem, Totemic Evidence. Okay, I have a board again. And the second they miss, they just get hit with one of the, 12 Bloodlusts in the deck and they die.
Yeah, like, the deck has insane reload. It has so much reload that it even stresses the most removal pack decks in the format. Even the most removal pack decks in the format can struggle to constantly clear its board of threats. And if you don't have AoE, then it just encroaches on you and just takes over. And it's very hard to deal with. So Totem Shaman is very, very strong. This is one of my recommendations for a deck that you can take to ladder on the month reset and quickly climb. It just does so well. Its matchup spread is extremely well-rounded. It just does well into a lot of things. But admittedly, I will admit, this deck is not really a Festival of Legends deck. This is more of a core update deck, right? With that got some core additions that made more of an impact. And it's just not, like, it's not a deck that people are particularly excited about.
But it is a new deck, right? Like, it's a core update. It's older cards finding relevance. It's a new deck. It's just, so there gets to be a point philosophically where they balance, and they balance the meta. And people are fixated on, well, it's not from the new set. It's not the cards that I was looking at from the new set, but it is a new deck. And it becomes really difficult to figure out what the goal needs to be. Like, do the relevant cards have to be in the expansion, even though they're gifting us new decks?
Yeah, that is a good point. But I will say that for aggressive decks, people are just less excited about them. If there is a class that has only one viable deck and it's aggressive, its play rate is like automatically going to be low. Like, you know this. This is a constant pattern. And I don't know if it's just because of the player-based preferences, a result of that, or content creator preferences. Maybe they generally don't like these decks, or they struggle to create good content from them because they don't do the explosive, attractive thing that's like a wow thing. You know, it doesn't have the wow impact. Like a Totem Shaman deck that like efficiently floods the board and reloads and encroaches on the opponent and kills them with Bloodlust is not something that you make a lot of YouTube highlights with.
I knew I should have streamed more, Zach. I knew I should have streamed more.
Maybe, because this deck does can pop off quite a bit.
Oh, it's popping.
Yeah, they look at, oh, it's Totem Shaman, I don't care. Like, Enrage Warrior, I don't care. Imporlock, I don't care. You know, it's a natural thing. It's a legitimate point, but you can't really say that Shaman is unplayable because this deck is very, very good. That is also a good point. And while, again, this is not a Festival Legend deck, it is a newish deck that pop off thanks to new updates to cards. And it's popping. It's doing really well.
Yeah, despite the very low play rate.
Its play rate is rising. I think this deck is going to... this deck is going to pop, appear in more traction. It's going to get more traction on the climb because it's just really efficient climber. It's a really effective deck.
Yep. And in terms of the class that I think... I hope you find something here, but this is the class coming up that I think is maybe in the most trouble and has the least engagement with the player base is Warlock, because imps are fine and people really want some kind of slower Warlock to be good, and I don't know if the fatigue cards, even with the buffs, belong anywhere outside of imps.
Yeah, Warlock is another class that's kind of in a bit of a relevance problem because, you know, the fatigue package buffs were successful in the sense that they're now really good cards in Imp Warlock, and Imp Warlock is good. Imp Warlock is absolutely a legit deck that is competitive and viable. And it's definitely functional. It works pretty well throughout everywhere on ladder. Even a top legend, its play rate is like 1% or even less than 1%, but it does well. It's a good deck. But do people are excited about this deck that, you know, has existed from Castle Nathria? No, they're not excited about it. They want to play with Chad. They want the Chad. And unfortunately, the Chad Warlock is just not good. It didn't get meaningful buffs, and it didn't seem to have picked up in form. It doesn't seem to be better than it was pre-patch.
I'm hopeful that you find a tier 3 build when you do refinement. That is my hope.
Yeah, I'll look into it. I'll try, but I wouldn't get my hopes up for Chad. It just doesn't, again, its late game just isn't. It's got scam potential, but there's not much backing it up. Like, good scam decks are decks that can scam, but also have something if you're able to deal with all the scam. You still have something backing it up. And it does have threat density with Reanimator, and you can play ETC and put Rivendare inside the ETC, and you can kind of win late game, but not Priest because they silence it. It's kind of tough, and It's clunky. It is very slow strategy. It is a slow line of play to win late game matchups. And often it's going to be very slow, too slow for like Demon Hunters and too slow for like Druids. So it's just not particularly functional. And the other thing that hurts Shad Warlock is lack of survivability. That might be a bigger issue. It just gets rolled over by aggression. Like, you have Defile, but you don't have great options to activate Defile. And your removal toolkit is generally weaker, definitely weaker than it was pre-rotation. So the deck's survivability isn't great either. Like, your survivability is basically scamming cards. Like, Enhanced Dreadlord, you scam the Enhanced Dreadlord, you scam the Flesh Behemoth. That helps you survive, but you don't have great removal. Or great healing tools as well. Not great ones. So that is a problem for the deck. But again, Imp Warlock is good. Imp Warlock with the fatigue package is very strong. People are trying out all sorts of cards in that deck. I'm seeing even people running Astalor and Rancher in Imp Warlock. It might be good, but generally, fatigue package, very effective in that archetype. But again, it's Imp Warlock, you know? People are not going to feel that. They're not going to experience that. They're not going to queue into a lot of Warlocks, and they're going to queue into more Death Knights and Demon Hunters and Druids, and they're going to feel, legitimately, that the format is not diverse, because even though there are a lot of competitive decks out there, and there are competitive decks for every class, some of them really struggle to gain traction and gain enough visibility and play rate. So the final class is Hunter, and Hunter does not feel like a final class at all because Face Hunter, again, an aggressive deck, but it does have good late game, is looking nutty. The build that we refined in the last report looks insane. Like, this is Face Hunter, again, aggregated stats are not going to tell the full story here, because aggregated stats, there are a lot of Face Hunter builds that are not good. There are a lot of Face Hunter builds that are not good, but this build is really good. I would say if I had to cut a card, it would be Mr. Mukla.
Aw.
I limit tested this deck. I put all the late game and I wanted to see what card falls off, what card kind of clashes with all the late game. And Mr. Mukla seems to be the card. Azara is fine. Hope of Quel'Thalas is fine. Collateral Damage is very good. Hydralodon is obviously going to be very good. These late game cards are good, but the Mukla kind of falls off compared to those. I will see what I can do. Maybe you expand the spell package. You run two Trinket Trackers and add a Bard Nets. Maybe something like that. Because Trinket Tracker is a very good card in the deck. So I will look into it. I'll see what I can do with Face Hunter to improve it even more. But it already is very powerful. And I will say that this Face Hunter deck is not particularly one-dimensional. It's got good late game. You got Azara plays. Hope of Quel'Thalas gives you longevity. You've got Collateral Damage as a finisher. There's definitely good stuff it can do in the late game. And it is getting a little bit of traction in every day. Hopefully it will get more visibility. It helps make the meta feel a bit more diverse, because it is a very powerful deck. Face Hunter is totally legit. I think the balance change has really helped. The lack of Vampiric Blood, additional Vampiric Bloods from Discover, is something that I noticed is helping that matchup. Like, Blood is still good into Face Hunter, but the matchup is, I think, more reasonable. And I think if Face Hunter manages to curate its late game better, then it will do better in the matchup. So, yeah, Face Hunter is good. There are some, you know, the hybrid builds are also okay, but I just always see them as worse Face Hunter versions with Renathal. And I don't think they can compete with a refined Face Hunter list that runs 30 cards. And Big B stuff, even though they made a meaningful buff to Stranger Thorn Heart from 10 to 8, it doesn't seem to be enough of a game changer for that deck to be good enough. It's okay, but it's not quite good enough to be relevant, let's say. So that's kind of it. So as you can see, every class in the format has viable decks, competitive decks. The problem war is about relevance and visibility. It is a legitimate problem. And I want to talk about this. I want to take the last 15, 20 minutes to have a little bit of a discussion and outlook on what's going on and why there is such a negative sentiment in the community about Festival of Legends. So let's talk about it, Hat. So what happened here, I think, is that Festival of Legends was kind of a weak... It's a weak set. In general, it's a weak set. There are some cards and some packages that ended up working out, but a lot of the things that was introduced in the set, especially when it comes to functional late-game strategies, flopped. I think that in general, it's not a coincidence. Aggressive decks are much easier to design and balance compared to combo control, resource-focused strategies. They're more difficult to get right in the design phase, in the balancing phase before an expansion launch. It makes sense that this would happen. But Festival of Legends in particular, as a first set tend to be weaker than sets throughout the year. It makes sense from a design perspective, but Festival of Legends might have been too weak. And it was too weak to the point where most of the good decks in the format are kind of old decks with some sprinkles of new stuff that ended up being successful from the set. And you add some decks that are kind of good but not particularly exciting, like Totem Shaman, and you have a recipe for people feeling legitimately frustrated that there's a new expansion and they don't feel like they play enough of the new exciting cards that they were, you know, signing up for. You know, like, there's a new expansion and there's this cool stuff with Mage that I wanted to try and it doesn't work. And there's this new stuff with Shaman and Warlock and Warrior and I'm trying on the ladder and it doesn't work. And instead, I'm queuing up and I'm seeing Demon Hunters, most of them doing similar things that they did before the rotation. I'm looking at Death Knights, high visibility throughout March of the Lich King after it got helped with some little bit buffs. And a mini set that was really impactful. And I'm seeing, you know, Blood Death Knights and Frost Death Knights. And if I'm playing at high MMR, I'm seeing Miracle Rogues again. I don't feel like there was an expansion. And that feeling of frustration is completely valid. It's understandable. I sympathize with it. I agree with it. I felt the same. I would have liked to be able to play with more of the Festival of Legend cards. It's a sentiment in the community that I'm definitely not criticizing whatsoever. I'm not going after the random person on Reddit who feels that this expansion has not been impactful. I sympathize and I agree with it. I understand the sentiment. It's a legitimate sentiment. However, what I do think that happened is, so this happened, right? There was this launch. It wasn't very impactful in terms of Festival of Legends cards. And then they announced a patch and they hinted to a lot of buffs and people got excited and they had their expectation raised that okay, this is going to fix the problem. They're going to buff decks into playability and we're going to have a real launch of Festival of Legends. But the problem is that many of the late game packages that they introduced in Festival of Legends were not something that were easily fixed through buffs. And they weren't going to be fixed by nerfs either. Because Overload Shaman, a deck like Overload Shaman, is not going to be good unless you buff like Pack the House to the point where it's so OP that Totem Shaman starts playing it. You cannot realistically buff that package of cards to the point where it can be functional and competitive without breaking something else. It's just not going to happen. Because its late game has no purpose. It wasn't purposeful enough. Mage is a very elaborate set with a card like Light Show that if you buff it to 2 mana, I don't know, it kind of spooks me. So I understand them not doing it. But it's a lot of cool stuff that just doesn't work late game. There's no late game functionality. And what happened here is that you had the buff patch and you had a lot of expectation. What ended up happening that the buff did some things well. Whomper is good, unfortunately, in a class that's already visible. And Imp Warlock is viable now. Unfortunately, nobody really cares. And Menagerie decks are looking better, but nobody's really trying them. Because again, they don't care about these decks enough. They want cool functional late game, and they only see it from Druid, Demon Hunter, Rogue, and Death Knight. And now maybe Priest. That's going to be a little bit of a help in the late game diversity department. But again, most classes don't have functional late games. Warlock, Warrior, a lot of them. And then what happened is that people transferred their frustration, because people are, they know when they're frustrated, but very often they don't exactly know why they're frustrated. And that can spill over. And what ended up happening is that people bashed and criticized Team 5 for the balance patch. A lot of them said the nerfs weren't good enough. Death Knight is still OP, and Death Knight is preventing the viability of other strats. We needed to nerf Death Knight harder. Or we needed to nerf, if we're nerfing Death Knight, we need to nerf Demon Hunter and Druid. We needed to nerf more stuff. We needed to nook multiple decks, Miracle Rogue, all that stuff, so that maybe things will change. And again, I understand the sentiment, but I think that that sentiment is misleading. It's giving Team 5 the kind of feedback that could lead to bad habits instead of making purposeful changes. Because the problem right now is not that the top decks are preventing the Festival Legend decks from being viable. It's that the Festival Legend decks just suck. They're just bad. They're just bad. And nuking the top decks are not going to make them viable. It's just going to make less. It's just going to give the format less options to play with. And if you want proof of that, I can give you proof right now. The two classes that did get purposeful Festival of Legends sets have functional late games. You look at Druid. You look at Demon Hunter. You look at Outcast DH. And you look at Tony Druid and Ozuma Druid. Druid is a completely new class post-rotation. It was heavily reliant on Festival Legend cards. It just got the set, the Festival Legend set, that was purposeful and had good direction and good enough power level, and it's able to perfectly compete with the established old decks. It's able to compete.
And this is after Druid lost so much stuff. So much lost like meta-defining stuff. It lost guff. It lost scale. Huge, huge stuff.
Huge stuff, and it's able to compete. So don't you can't tell me that Death Knight is preventing the other decks from seeing play. Those decks are not seeing play because their sets were not good enough. Druid got a good enough set, and it managed to survive a brutal rotation period, and it's able to compete. Demon Hunter is able to compete. What happens is most classes in the format don't have functional late game, which is why Shaman, Warlock, Hunter are relying on early game strategies to be viable. And they're viable. They are competitive. But people want more diverse late game. And I get that. I totally get that.
I will also note that some of the symptoms we have here. First of all, the fact that every class has something to do is a major benefit of the core set being as pushed as it was. And I'm really glad that they decided, let's put good cards in the core set, because otherwise, some of these classes would not have anything to do. But they also shied away from powerful, neutral endgame strategies, which we've had in the core set before, because they didn't want to homogenize. They were definitely scared of that, and with good reason, since Nathria and since Astalor in March of the Lich King. So they didn't put consistent game enders in there. And the set did not really provide for a lot of classes.
Yeah. And again, the balance changes is not at fault here. Because what I saw a lot of content creators criticizing Team 5 for the balance patch or demanding to nerf things harder, when I actually think that the nerfs were very responsible and also impactful. They're going to prove to be impactful. They're just not going to salvage the dud sets of Festival Legend, the class set. Some of the classes got dud sets that are very hard to push without over buffing things or creating problems down the road. So the thing that I want to highlight is that the problem is not poor balancing post launch. It's the Festival Legend set. Core set had good updates and led to viability of strategies. Things like Totem Shaman are appearing thanks to the core set updates. But when it comes to the Festival Legend set, it was a bit too underpowered, even for a first set of the expansion. this is why this frustration has, this is why the sentiment was created. But the thing that I want to, I really wanted to highlight this, because the criticism with the balance patch is, I feel, is unfair. And it also creates, like, it can lead to bad habits or Team 5 opting to do things that you may not want it to do. And the thing that you don't want Team 5 to start doing again is nuking decks. Like, imagine they started nuking things that people were, like, a bit tired of, like Miracle Rogue. What does Rogue have left if you nuke Miracle Rogue?
Menagerie.
It has nothing.
No one will play it. No one will play it.
No one will play it, and no one will care.
This was what happened in Voyage and Nethria.
Exactly.
They deleted decks. Warrior is still paying for it to this day. And the amount of churn that they introduced through constant, extremely impactful, super heavy-handed patches was worse for the game, not just for the high-level players, but also for the more casual players. I heard about it a lot, that it was just impossible to keep up with, and that decks kept breaking, and the meta kept changing. They didn't know what to do, and now core game rules are changing. It was too much, and decks were being deleted every 2 weeks or so. It was not the right thing to do.
Yeah, and the thing is, the people who are right now vying for Control Warrior, on one hand, you're vying for Control Warrior deck. And I get that. I also want a playable Control Warrior. But you can't say that you want Control Warrior to be viable, so the thing that we need to do is to nuke decks. Because the very problem that was created, the reason why Control Warrior has not been viable for 10 months, was because it was over nerfed. So the thing about over nerfing things or nerfing things too harshly, what it leads, it's not just deletes decks instantly, it hurts those archetypes' ability to be viable in the future, because you're making changes that could be impactful and prevent a new deck, a new package that maybe this archetype wants to support in the future, and it's not able to because you nerfed some of its key tools earlier. And this is what you're seeing with Warrior right now. If you nerf Blood Death Knight too hard right now, think about this. I know that Blood Death Knight launched with all the rest of the Death Knight decks, but notice what happened with the expansion sets. If you look at the expansion cards, March of the Lichkin is heavily blood-focused. This set in Festival of Legends has good support for blood. It's very likely that the next set that's coming in the summer is not going to have much blood support at all. So if you nuke Blood Death Knight right now, which you have no real, like, you tweaked it, you nudged it, and it's fine now. But if you nuked it, and it wouldn't be viable anymore, it may not have been viable for like 6 to 10 months because it wouldn't get support in the next set. So do you want to delete a deck for the next 6-10 months? I'm sure the people who hate playing in this deck are going to say yes. But I'm an advocate of keeping decks viable if they don't have egregious play patterns and they're popular because people love playing them. I want to keep them around. So if you're over enough Death Knight right now, you might lead to this class struggling to be relevant and viable in the future. And then you're creating kind of the similar problem that you're having right now, which that there are a lot of classes that are struggling for relevance because they got over nerfed in the past. So you can, on one hand, criticize Team 5 for over-nerfing things, which led to the lack of viability of a favorite deck in the past, and then in the same breath, advocate for hard nerfs that can potentially delete existing strategies from seeing play. Because the way I see it, from what I've seen from Festival of Legends, if classes actually got good sets from Festival of Legends, they were able to compete with the established archetypes. So if it happened in Druid and it happened in Demon Hunter, it could have happened for other classes too. It was just that the Festival of Legends set were just duds in a lot of classes. And I'm talking mostly about late game. Aggressive decks exist in almost every class. There are good aggressive decks. But unfortunately, aggressive decks are easier to balance, easier to design for. Late game functionality, something went wrong here. This is the problem. And this is what's leading to the frustration, the legitimate sentiment that we can't do exciting enough of the exciting new stuff that Festival of Legends has to offer. And that is a completely legitimate argument. I'm just saying it spilled over to criticizing Team Fire for balance changes that I think was a bit unfair. And on top of it, some content creators even openly mocked Team Fire for the balance patch. And I think that's sending a wrong message to them. Because let me tell you, I guarantee you, it is much, much easier to delete classes, to delete decks. People are frustrated about the decks. It is very hard to hard nerf decks. Let's put Frostman's Fury to 8 mana and Vampiric Blood to 3 mana. Let's just delete these classes so people will stop complaining about them. It's very easy to do. It is much braver to make light nudges and see what happens. To hear all this criticism and demands to nerf a deck and try to keep it viable. That is a much more difficult to do. That opens you up for criticism. And, you know, developers may feel in the future that, like, you know, I'm not going to take this risk. I'm going to delete this deck and I'm going to quiet down the complaints. But that kind of attitude is what led to several classes struggling to find late game functionality because they were over nerfed in the past. So I don't want to see over nerfs. I would like to, if I'm nerfing decks, I would like to keep them viable if they're not Turtle Mage kind of stupid, right? If it's not letting you, if it lets you play Hearthstone, I would rather keep it around, especially if it's popular and people enjoy playing it. So the nerfs to Death Knight for me were good. They were good nerfs. Death Knight currently doesn't prevent anything from seeing play if it has late game functionality. It doesn't prevent aggressive decks from seeing play as well. Blood Death Knight, even though it's good against aggressive decks, lots of aggressive decks are really good right now, despite the presence of Blood Death Knight. So what is the real problem? I just told you. Late game functionality, late game diversity, people feel like they don't have enough cool stuff to do in the late game. Nuking Miracle Rogue, Demon Hunter, Druid, stuff like that may open up space in theory, but what it's more likely to do, guys, it's just going to make Control Priest the best deck. Like, if you nuke Tony Druid, you nuke Demon Hunter, you nuke Miracle Rogue, you nuke Death Knight, what's going to happen is that Control Priest is just going to grind everyone to dust. And I don't know, maybe you want that. Maybe Wicked Good, your co-host partner from Coney Concede, would like that. But I don't think most people that play Hearthstone want Control Priest to be a tier 1 dominant deck with a 20%+ play rate. I think we've been there before. So I would like, my ideal is that classes gain lane game functionality and you get not just early game diversity, which exists right now, but you also get late game diversity. This is what we're missing. This is what's leading to this frustration. And again, I'm not attacking anyone for being frustrated. I am calling out people who are mocking Team Fire for making balance changes. I am calling them out. Don't do that. That leads to toxicity. That leads to a negative dialogue. But what we can't do about a positive dialogue is, Team 5, listen, late game functionality is really weak. There are only a few classes that can compete in the late game. This is why we're a bit upset. Totally legitimate. Totally legitimate. So that's what's happening right now.
Well, we'll see what they say. I have personally been stretching my restraint muscles on social media lately because I got to get ready to not jump in these arguments, man.
Yeah.
Got to get ready. That's going to be the biggest challenge for me, but I think you summarized it well. And I'm glad the core set gave us options. I'm glad they didn't push neutral legendaries. I'm glad every class has something to do, but yeah. When I see cool cards in the spoiler, I want to play with the cool cards, and a lot of them are just kind of bad. So I don't know. We'll see where that ends up going, but the further we can get from the Voyage philosophy, the better of over nerf and heavy churn, that was actively not good for the game. Now, we have some debate on whether or not the patch is impactful within the 24 hours after the patch hits. I think that is hasty and frankly unreasonable, but I'd still much, much, much rather have this scenario than what we had last year where the meta was being forcibly shifted every 2 weeks.
I think that it's just like Team 5 kind of are in a spot where they harshly nerf things, they nuke things out of existence, and they're still feeling the effects of it. You look at Control Warrior. Now they're taking a more cautious approach, with lighter nerf to things in order to keep them viable. I think this approach is good. I think this approach needs to be encouraged. And I think the illness of Festival of Legends is not because of, you know, failed balance patches. I think this is an issue with the sets themselves. And this is what the feedback, I feel a healthy feedback should be. But yeah, hopefully we'll be able to find more discoveries. There are still discoveries happening on a daily basis. I'm hoping that we find more new stuff to do, hopefully with classes that are less visible. And yeah, it'll help us tide us over to the next balance patch. And in the next balance patch, I'm hoping if we're making nerfs, again, keep them light, keep the top decks viable. You know, if there's something that doesn't let you play Hearthstone, nuke that, sure. But hopefully more braver buffs to things. It's not like they didn't make brave buffs in this patch. They buffed a lot of things. But you can push things a little bit further. You can, chorus buff can be 2 mana. You can maybe push Big Paladin. You can push Shaman, maybe other Shaman in another late game direction that might lead it to be help it. Maybe you can make that risky light show buff or a rewind buff or something like that. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Do not put more solid alibis into my life, Zach. I do not want more solid alibis.
Okay. Maybe not. But yeah, you see how tricky it can be. But I do think that it's not the problem is not that they didn't nerf things enough, hard enough, because I definitely see that the nerfs had an impact. I'm just hoping that the community eventually can feel that, not just see that in the data, but also feel that in terms of play experience and opponents on ladder, because I do recognize that in the early days of this patch and still now, it doesn't feel like there was a patch because you still see a lot of Death Knights and you see a lot of like Undead Priests and things that you've seen before. So I get that sentiment. I'm just hoping that this is time lagged and you're going to be able to queue up into different opponents more, Totem Shamans and Big Demon Hunters and stuff like that. So we'll see. And Control Priest. I'm not sure I'm wishing that to people, but Control Priest. Just be careful. Don't nerf everything until Control Priest is tier S. Don't do that. Just be careful. Remember what I said.
That's Team it. 5, save us. Save us from Control Priest. Okay. I'm going to wind down the show here, but everyone, thank you so much for listening. VS Gold, VS Silver, Patreon members, thank you so much for your subbing and supporting, as always. You can look forward to the next report on Thursday at the normal time, Thursday the 4th, noon Eastern U.S. time. And the final podcast for me will be the weekend after Saturday or Sunday. We'll see exactly when it gets done. And then the new host will step in after that. Evil Dave, thank you so much for the podcast transcriptions. Steven Sensei, thank you so much for the intro and outro. Talk to you all soon.
The Data Reaper podcast is an official production of Vicious Syndicate. Don't forget to sign up and contribute your game data to improve the quality of the weekly Data Reaper report. Instructions are available on our website, along with lots of other weekly content at vicioussyndicate.com. Thank you to all of our patrons and data contributors for proving there's strength in numbers.